Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning, 810 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay, Pensacola Morning News. Great to have you with us on this Friday morning. Julio Diaz, he is the host of Let's Go Pensacola that airs 4 o'clock on Saturdays here on News Radio, and he also is the founder and the host of the Pensacola Movie Club. Follow them on Facebook and talk about movies with them. Julio, welcome back, sir.
Morning, Andrew.
Good morning. Clown in a Cornfield, a rom-com?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a clown and he meets a cornfield, and they kind of stumble into each other, and at first they are attracted to each other, but then the clown finds out that the cornfield is trying to shut down his bookstore, and I get gone.
It sounds like this is not the actual plot, but okay. What's the actual plot?
But you'd see that movie, right?
I mean, sure.
The meet cute is I was at a party and
we met in a cornfield and my bookstore is, it sounds like a Hallmark movie. All right. What's the actual movie about?
So, kind of some pretty common horror movie tropes. There's a cornfield, there's a clown, clowns killing people, it's about a young girl, a 17-year-old girl, and her father moved to this small town in what they call flyover country. It's somewhere non-specific in the Midwest.
Okay.
Called Kettle Springs, and this town is built around a corn syrup factory. The corn syrup brand has this clown mascot called Friendo. That's the center of the town. Of course, there's somebody dressing up like Friendo and killing people. Sounds kind of generic. But this movie has a lot of fun with the tropes and has some fun postmodern twists on it, things that you wouldn't have seen in a previous horror movie.
Okay.
It's directed by Eli Craig, who did Tucker and Dale vs. Evil, which is a much better movie than this one. Let me put that out there out front. But I still had a lot of fun with this.
All right. Interesting. Yeah, no, and it does make me think that, the clown lobby just needs to make better movies, because there's never been a movie that's pro-clown that I can remember.
Yeah. There's definitely some twists in this that you're not going to expect, I will say.
Fight or Flight?
Yeah. You remember how there was a movie a couple of years ago called Bullet Train?
Yeah, great movie.
Bunch of assassins on a train. Yeah. Yeah, so they basically made that with Josh Duhamel and put it on a plane.
They should have called it Josh Duhamel's on a plane. But okay.
Is it Josh Duhamel? I'm sorry, no. Is it Josh Duhamel or is it I can't even remember now.
It's so irrelevant. We don't need to dwell.
The same guy they made the M. Night Shyamalan trap movie with. Is it Josh Duhamel, Jim Caviezel? It could be one of them. I don't know. But it's getting okay reviews in the 75% range on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, well, that's a little bit more satisfying. Yeah. So, okay, I'll take it. We also have Shouting Force. Is that the name of it? Josh Hartnett, by the way. Josh Hartnett was the actor.
Oh, thank you. I mean, one of those. There's guys that came up in the 90s that everybody's like, oh, they're still acting, and it's not in a Hallmark movie? Okay. We seem to be centered on Hallmark movies.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure why. So yeah, Shouting Force?
At any rate, Shadow Force.
Oh, Shadow Force, my fault.
Yeah, so this is about a couple of Special Forces people played by Kerry Washington and Omar Sy, who broke the rules and fell in love and quit and started a family, and now they're being pursued by the very shadowy forces they used to work for. Not screened for critics on this one.
That tells you what you want to know. Got it. Stand Your Ground?
Sounds like a Ron DeSantis fever dream to me, but it's about a guy who uses the Stand Your Ground laws to get revenge on the people that killed his wife. Some kind of organized crime thing or whatever.
Oh, that actually sounds kind of interesting. Is it?
Not screen. It sounds like a warmed over 80s action movie to me, but your mileage may vary at any rate, not screen for critics.
All right. Well, I suppose depending on how it's written, how it's presented, if it's meant as a political treatise
or if it's meant as a real
investigation of the legalities and the technicalities, stuff that I care quite a bit about.
It's a concept that could be interesting. Absolutely. Right. It just doesn't seem to be in this particular case.
And what I can only guess is a feminist retake on a Shakespearean classic, Juliet and Romeo?
I don't think it's necessarily particularly a feminist retake on it. It is, however, a pop musical retake on it.
Okay.
Which, you know, we've already had a musical version of Romeo and Juliet. It was called West Side Story. You know, won a few Oscars, and they made it again, you know, a few years ago, won a few Oscars. This one, not going to win a few Oscars. 18% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yikes. So I guess stay home and watch Netflix this weekend. Okay, all right, fair enough. what are you guys going to watch next weekend, Julio?
Actually, next week is looking a little more dire than this week. We've got the latest Final Destination movie coming out. And that seems to be the big one next week. So you're either excited about that or...
What are we at, 23, 24? What's the number for Final Destination?
Yeah, I don't know. The one thing about this one that gives me a little bit of like, well, you know, maybe it's because it's unfortunately Tony Todd's last film before he passed. But, you know, for most of us, Final Destination just means we don't drive behind trucks that are carrying large pipes anymore.
And that's exactly it. If there's stuff hanging off the truck, I change lanes. I mean, that's what I learned from Final Destination, and that's all I ever need to know. Julio Diaz, he is the host of Let's Go Pensacola, Saturdays at 4 here on News Radio, and also the host and founder and organizer of the Pensacola Movie Club. Follow them on Facebook. Julio, as always, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks, Andrew.
8:15 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
I just hope you're not passing in the left lane when that overhanging
way to tie it together, brother. Way to tie it together. I like that.
Brought to you by Insect Pest and Lawn. Get your yard spring ready with $100 off your first treatment with a new annual contract. Call Insect today. Got an accident to let you know about on Highway 90 and Bell Lane. Now, it's affecting the northbound parts of Bell Lane. So in between Skipper and Highway 90 is where the accident occurred. So just be aware of that. Probably right in front of the Tom Thumb, which normally that's where those happen right there. Other than that, we're looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Why would the papal conclave get canceled? Find out next in the Transgressors Memorial Service.
Gathering at Pensacola Beach is a wonderful family experience. If you've thought about having a family celebration or an amazing beach wedding, there is a very special home now available, Casa de Luna. Casa de Luna is spacious with room for large families. It has 9 large bedrooms and 8 bathrooms. Casa de Luna is a large private home with a refreshing pool and water views. The pool has a new 4,000 BTU gas heater. Casa de Luna is unique in that the main living area is directly on the ground level. It's very convenient. Bedrooms are both on the ground level and upstairs. One bathroom is handicap friendly, and another has a jacuzzi tub. There is a large gaming porch with a pool table, hockey, ping pong, and Xbox One. Bicycles are provided. Bring your family to Casa de Luna on Pensacola Beach.
For information, call Casa de Luna at 850-433-4855. That's 850-433-4855.
Hey, Pensacola. It's Christina Leavenworth with the Leavenworth team at Leavenrinke Realty. Your home is your most valuable asset, so make sure you're hiring a professional, the Leavenworth team. The Leavenworth team has the knowledge and expertise to help you buy or sell your home with confidence. Don't even think about making a real estate move without at least talking to us first. Contact us today at 850-378-1260. The Leavenworth team. Experience matters, and we're here to help.
Bands on the Beach is back. Bring a lawn chair or a towel and enjoy live music at the stage on Pensacola Beach. There's plenty of room to spread out and enjoy the sand, the sunset, and great live music every Tuesday night at 7. This week, it's True Blue Band with a blend of upbeat grooves and soulful singing that make True Blue one of the top up-and-coming acts on the Gulf Coast. They're a must-see with R&B, soul, and roots. You'll be dancing the night away at Bands on the Beach. Remember, no pets and no glass.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, Pep Talk. Mornings at 9, right after Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion. It must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the Holy Roman Catholic Church, which has yet again shown itself to be decidedly unwoke about the significance of race and race symbolism. Obviously, we have a long-standing objection to the church for its refusal to allow women in leadership, for its opposition to reproductive rights, and for hostility toward every symbol of the holy acronym string, even the ones that nobody really knows what they mean. But if we had any hopes at all for improvement by the robe-wearing landlords of Vatican City, it was that they would finally nominate a pope of color. After all, among the 252 cardinals in the conclave, 29 are from Africa, and one is even African-American. With 30 black cardinals to choose from, we hoped, perhaps naively, that it could really happen. But to no avail, yet another white guy has taken his seat on the gold throne. So disappointing. As you may know, there have been 266 popes, only three of them have been black. That means only 1% of all popes have been African. But if you consider time served, the picture's even worse. Pope Victor I served 10 years from 189 to 199 AD. Pope Miltiades served for 3 years from 311 to 314. And Pope Gelasius I served 4 years from 492 to 496. This means that of the 1,992 years since St. Peter, the first pope, only 17 years, or less than 0.1% of the lifespan of the Catholic Church, has seen it led by a black pope. More proof that racism really is just a math problem. But it's worse than that. Consider some of the color choices associated with the papacy. His vestments are white, or at least off-white, perhaps ivory. The acolytes wear white. The candles are white. Jesus is referred to as the light of the world, whereas Lucifer is referred to as the prince of darkness, at least according to John Milton. And who gets to wear black in Catholicism? The nuns. The lowly nuns. And, well, yeah, the priests, when they go out into the lost world, as a representation of mourning and death. But at that point, what distinguishes them from Johnny Cash? A white collar. The only routinely black thing in the church is often a Bible, black letters, right? Which as soon as you open it, is page upon page of white space dominating the very small black letters, and sometimes red ones, whatever that means. But of course, the most obvious racism in the church is in the conclave itself, which sends out its message of progress to the people with contrasting colors of smoke. Black smoke for failure and white smoke for sweet victory. White is for winning and black is for losing? It really doesn't get much more unwoke than that. This entire religious organization with its history of radical exclusion and its patently racist color palette must go. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, Florida, the state that regularly runs afoul of everything we stand for. Why can't they just stop attacking us? Well, in the latest offense worthy of their cancellation, the legislature and the governor actually agreed about something. Something awful. Reversing decades of good public policy, scientific data, and children with reduced cavities, Florida is now banning the use of all additives in drinking water that do not specifically improve the quality of the water, and that includes banning fluoride. You would think that a state which has a name so similar to the very chemical under consideration would have made a different choice. Fluoride, fluorid, it's almost identical. Why the separation? You even have native entertainers such as Florida, who seem to recognize that being a Sunshine Stater makes much more sense if one is pro-fluoride. Duh. Literally, the word for turning someone into a resident is the same word for making water safer. Fluoridation. But no, the state has gone the other way. And of course, it saddens us because we believe reducing cavities, especially for poor children who don't have good oral care routines or access to dental services, is a good thing. But that's not the real issue. You see, as advocates of communitarian thinking and opponents of individualism, we agree with the cavity-loving Republicans. This is really an issue about medical socialism versus medical freedom. They say it's wrong to force people to drink medicine without their consent. We say it's irrelevant whether people consent to what's good for them. As Phil Bink's fourth treatise on the benevolence of government reminds us, government exists to do to people what they won't do to themselves for their own good. Sometimes called paternalism, this core idea of government as the kind, wise, and loving parent who takes care of its citizen children even against their will or when they're being bratty, is of course the only rational thing to believe, as we do. And it's easy to understand because the needs of the community and the wisdom of the community always outweigh the judgment of the individual. People don't have the right to harm themselves, and they certainly don't have the right to harm children, which is exactly what making Florida into Floridna means. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Finally, we want to take a moment to celebrate a major milestone in American religious history as the Presbyterian Church USA recently made the decision to close down its missions program after more than 200 years. Yes, the Presbyterian Church was the first Protestant denomination in the United States to formally establish a national mission program, the Standing Committee of Missions, in 1802. And after 223 years of sending tens of thousands of devoted Christians around the world to preach the gospel and serve those in need, PCUSA recently gutted its missions division, blaming the cutbacks on declining membership and faltering finances. Obviously, the entire project of Christian evangelism stands at odds with our core beliefs. Christians believe in fixed and immutable truths, whereas we believe in the viewpoint of the individual or the group. Christians believe in salvation by faith in Jesus Christ, whereas we believe in salvation by pretending to be a more and more virtuous person all the time. Christians believe the Bible is the Word of God, whereas we believe men wrote the Bible and it's done nothing but get in the way of healthy societies ever since. And of course, historically, Christians have been so devoted to these core ideas that they've traveled around the world to persuade others to believe them, building hospitals, teaching children to read, and providing for the poor, afflicted, and imprisoned along the way. But no more, and it's a good thing too, you see? The very idea of evangelism is culturally arrogant, starting from the premise that we know something that the target group doesn't know. But who are we to tell other people how to live, except that everything we stand for is about telling people how to live, including telling them not to tell other people how to live. We strongly oppose the narrow-mindedness of lecturing other people on what they should do, which is why we constantly lecture people not to lecture people on what they should do. You see, it's not narrow-minded when we tell other people how to live. It's open-minded because it's open-minded to be narrow-minded when telling narrow-minded people that they should stop telling other people to be narrow-minded. Understand? The point here is that even though we agree with the Presbyterians about nearly everything these days, from social justice to racial reconciliation to climate alarmism to sexual anarchy and to honoring all of our LGBTQ2+ square root of six friends in being whatever they decide they are, we nevertheless celebrate the closing down of any Christian missions program, especially one as long-standing as that of the PCUSA. So well done, quitters! Besides, it's not as though the Bible gives you some great commission to spread the good news or anything silly like that. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
826 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. Well done, quitters. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives, John.
That's still the square root of the two or something.
Square root of six.
Yeah. Oh,
you got to know what the symbol means.
I know. Yeah. And I don't. So one less tambourine for me.
There. Well, or one fewer hemp tassel.
Ooh. Ooh, that Move hurt. All right. Only one accident to let you know about on Highway 90 and Bell Lane that just happened between Skipper and Highway 90. And it's blocking the northbound side of Bell Lane. So just be careful if you're using that cut through right there in front of the Tom Thumb. Other than that, I-10, I-110 are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Going in the newsroom now, David Wayne is there with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy yesterday announcing a bunch of changes to air traffic control. He's looking at going to lawmakers to get approval for several changes there. The Trump administration calling for a massive investment, including an update in technology and equipment. It could be a 3 to 4 year project. NYPD has arrested several pro-Palestinian protesters at a university in Brooklyn. This is one day after similar protests were held at Columbia University. A group apparently set up camp in the quad at Brooklyn College yesterday. By 5 p.m., social media live streams were showing 50 to 100 police officers clashing with those protesters. And an American cardinal celebrating his first Mass as Pope Leo XIV. The Mass at the Sistine Chapel was attended by cardinals who elected the Pope this week during a two-day conclave at the Vatican. Of course, as we've been mentioning all morning, Cardinal Robert Francis Prevost of Chicago, now the first American Pope.
The Pope. David, thanks so much for the update. Not my joke originally.
Thank you so much, Andrew. Appreciate that.
So what is the thing that said somebody, all these memes online are hilarious. Sorry, boss, I can't do any work today. I'm looking at all the Chicago Pope memes. You know, everything from the Portillo's hot dog sign behind the Vatican to, you know, may God bless everyone in the world today except Green Bay Packers fans. You know, like all of the... It's funny. I mean, come on. When you get an American Pope, you get American jokes. You know, that's going to come with the territory. What was the other thing I was going to tell you about? Oh, we talked with Jimmy Petronas about this on Monday. Our congressman, Jimmy Jimmy Patronus. They were going to take up the bill from Marjorie Taylor Greene to officially designate the Gulf of Mexico.
America.
As the Gulf of
America.
There you go. And they did. And it passed 211 to 206. Democrats calling it a waste of time. One Republican voting against it. GOP Representative Don Bacon, who I suddenly respect quite a bit, said, "It just seems juvenile. We're the United States of America. We're not Kaiser Wilhelm's Germany or Napoleon's France. We're better than this. It just sounds like a sophomore thing to do." House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, how dare you make me agree with Hakeem Jeffries, called it silly, small-minded, sycophantic piece of legislation. It's a loyalty test is what it is, I think. Anyway, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene called it one of the most important things we can do this. Come on. Names matter. Parents take a lot of time when they think about what to name a child, and they're happy to welcome in the world because they have pride and welcome the new baby into the world, and that's why they take pride in the name that they name their child. Boy, that's very rambling. She claimed Democrats oppose the name change because drug cartels are their business partners.
Fox News. I'm Chris Foster.
You have called me to carry that cross and to be blessed with that mission.
Cardinal Robert Prevost in the Chicago suburbs. Now Pope Leo XIV celebrates his first Mass as leader of the Catholic Church at the Vatican Sistine Chapel. He'll be formally installed as Pope at a Mass a week from Sunday. It's Victory Day in Russia.
Russia's Victory Day parade celebrates the defeat of Nazi Germany and displays the country's modern military might to the world. The current conflicts are front of mind. President Putin hailed North Korean soldiers who've helped his war on Ukraine.
Fox's Jonathan Savage. Former Supreme Court Justice David Souter died. He was 85 on the court from 1990 to 2009, nominated by President George H.W. Bush. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 8:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now we've got 75 degrees. It is mostly cloudy this morning in Pensacola. Three cities in Okaloosa County have now voted to install speed cameras in school zones. The latest is Crestview, and police say they ran a three-day traffic survey there and found a big problem. A lot of speeding drivers, one of them recorded at more than 75 miles per hour. The city council there approving a camera system unanimously. Speeding drivers, though, aren't limited to Okaloosa County and Gulf Breeze. They're paying attention to this issue. Police Chief Rick Hawthorne says it's a problem there as well.
This past year, we put up two additional yellow blinking lights, try to help slow people down that are headed westbound. It really hasn't.
And Hawthorne tells Channel 3 they'll be watching to see how the cameras work in Okaloosa County, and they may look into installing some of those in Gulf Breeze in the future as well. Controversial UWF Board of Trustees member Adam Kissel remains a sitting member on the board. Now, that's despite the Florida Senate taking no action on his confirmation last month. Kissel will reportedly serve until 45 days after the legislative session, which, of course, has been extended as lawmakers continue work on a state budget. The PNJ reached out to State Senator Don Gates, who says Kissel could even be reappointed for another year by the governor. Kissel was one of five people appointed to the board by the governor in January. Only two were confirmed by the Senate, Paul Bailey and Chris Young. Kissel's affiliation with the Heritage Foundation and stances on the privatization of public universities and the GI Bill proved to be controversial topics during his confirmation hearings. Pensacola kicking off a new initiative aimed at increasing access to childcare in the city.
This initiative is our city's investment into our children of this community. And so Teresa has been hitting the ground running, doing a great job handling this. And this is our first big initiative, which is the Child Care Summit on May 28th.
Mayor D.C. Reeves, the city hoping to increase the availability, quality, and affordability of childcare. They start with a child care summit on May 28th. They'll have nearly 40 experts there to discuss issues and try and find some solutions. Their goal is to increase the number of child care centers in the city and to help existing providers expand their services. Mayor Reeves said the city has now hired a full-time employee specifically to work on this initiative. Well, tomorrow is the Stamp Out the Hunger food drive. You can put food near your mailbox in a grocery bag and your mail carrier will pick it up as they make their rounds.
So Saturday it's incredibly important food drive for us. Last year it brought in about 80,000 pounds.
Okay.
The year before that, about 90,000 pounds. So we are seeing, unfortunately, a decrease in food donations. It's not surprising, given the price of food.
And that's Dee Dee Flaunlacker, the executive director of Mana Food Pantry. She says they'll have volunteers at the post office to help sort donations as they come in. She says an opportunity to make a real difference in our community. They're looking for canned goods, vegetables, tuna or chicken, and fruit. She says peanut butter also is a very in-demand item at the Mana Pantries. They give out more than 55,000 pounds of food to those in need every month. 8:35 at News Radio 92.3. John Pickens has our traffic on the fives.
That's right. Brought to you by Knox Pest Control. Their family serving your family since 1929. For information on free pest or termite quote, you can visit knoxpest.com. Knox knocks them out. We're still dealing with that one fender bender that happened on Bell Lane and Highway 90. Still seeing a minor roadblock with that on Bell Lane, so just be aware of that. But other than that, I-10, I-110 are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. And right now it's 75 and partly cloudy in Pensacola. Let's get a quick check with Brooke Richardson.
We are going to be seeing some showers and thunderstorms, especially as you go later throughout the day today. About an 80% chance of showers and thunderstorms, high near 78. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 65. For Saturday, 70% chance of showers and thunderstorms, high near 79. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 65. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. Again, 75, partly cloudy right now. Our next news at 9, breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. And your money now. Markets up at the opening bell. The Dow's up 127 points at 41,495. S&P up 25.5 points, 56.89. NASDAQ up 130 points at 1860. 10-year bond rate down very slightly, 4.371% this morning. Gold up 34.50 at 3,340.50. Silver up 23 cents at 32.84. Crypto up across the board today. Bitcoin up almost 2,000, 103,204 right now. Ethereum's up 260. Solana's up 12 bucks. Dogecoin up by a cent. And XRP up a little bit as well. Taking a look at our financial headlines today. A Virginia resident will be spending more than 30 years in prison for funneling money to ISIS. The Justice Department said yesterday Mohammed Shipa raised money and sent it to female ISIS members between 2019 and 2022. He reportedly raised at least $185,000, which he sent in cryptocurrency. President Trump giving Rolls-Royce a tariff break.
Trump announced Thursday that he was reducing tariffs on luxury British car makers like Aston Martin, Range Rover, and Rolls-Royce from over 27% down to 10%. He said his reasoning was that Rolls-Royce was not going to be built in the U.S. and said he wouldn't even ask them to do that. Trump added that he was keeping high tariffs on Mattel, which makes about 40% of its toys, including Barbie dolls, in China. The CEO of Mattel said recently that he didn't foresee moving his toy manufacturing to the U.S. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
And the U.S. and U.K. have announced a new trade deal. President Trump making that announcement yesterday at the White House. He said it feels like it'll be a great deal for both countries. The trade deal with the U.K. would be the first to be reached since the sweeping tariff plan. Trump said the U.S. is working on deals with other countries as well. Your next news at 9 o'clock. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. And this is Your Money Now.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic, but don't have a radio nearby? Then you need to download our new app. With the News Radio Pensacola app, you can get text alerts for breaking news, severe weather, and traffic delays. Plus, customize your alerts so you only get the information you need. It's easy to sign up for text alerts. Just download our app, create an account, and select the alerts you want to receive. You can even change your settings at any time. So what are you waiting for? Download the News Radio Pensacola app today and start getting text alerts.
To the hip, the hip, the hip, 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 how you don't stop? Rap, 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 rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Commissioner Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's a chance to talk about the news of the week or whatever comes up with a couple of friends who are in studio. And it's kind of like we're drinking coffee or beers or both, and not at the same time. But Josh Newby, who is a dear, dear friend, and I was in Leadership Pensacola with a long time ago, he is the executive director of the Council on Aging West Florida. Josh, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
I failed last month. We have you on the second Friday of every month. Yeah. I failed last month. It was your 20th appearance.
Is it? Whoa, so this is my 21st, so I can drink now.
Yeah,
I can drink those beers you referenced.
Okay, great. Good one. All right. Grover Robinson, a former mayor, former commissioner, who is now the government community affairs or community relations person for Pensacola State College. Grover, welcome back.
Happy to be here. Happy to be here. And I'm drinking my water because I'm not yet to 21 appearances.
When you get there, one day you'll grow up, son. So obviously the big news of the day is the fact that we have a pope at all. Okay, and which I shouldn't say we, because it's, you know, I'm not a Catholic. No, you guys are not Catholic. Grover's, you're an Episcopalian, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, and Josh, what would you describe as?
A Jew-capalian?
Because you're Jewish by right. lineage, but...
Right, I guess if I had to choose a denomination,
if you had to pick something
sure.
to be Episcopalian, all right, fair enough. But so it's, you know, he's not our pope, but he is the pope. And, of course, the more relevant news, I think, for a lot of people is the fact that it's the first American pope in history, yeah. which is... I did not
think that would ever happen in my lifetime.
I didn't either.
And I'm surprised by it. And I guess we, as Episcopalians, Anglicans, we are like Catholic light. So we're kind of Catholic, but we're light.
Once upon a time, it wasn't so friendly, but now, right.
That's right. Exactly.
It's medium high liturgy is the way I describe the Anglican or the Episcopalian church. It's not Lutheran, which is medium low liturgy. Mm-hmm. You know, Methodist is right there in the middle, medium, you know, but...
Is this your homily?
The liturgical scale, yeah, you know? Yeah. Meanwhile, you have all of your non-denominational, you know, or evangelical and or charismatic is all no liturgy.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's got a liturgy. The liturgy is just the order of service, but you know what I mean.
Sure.
Go ahead, Josh. You were going to say.
No, I wasn't going to say anything. Right. I was just going to let you keep going.
Okay. Yeah. It's good. Good stuff. Do you think he seems to be more international than American to me.
Mm-hmm.
Judging by his history, judging by some of the things of course it's early. Who knows what he's going to do as a pope? But I, you know, people I think are thinking, all right, we got a Chicago kid in as pope.
In name only.
Yeah,
sort of. It seems.
I mean,
yeah.
Was Francis the Argentinian kid?
Right.
I mean, not really.
Right.
It
right.
really doesn't work that way.
Well, everything seems to say that he is. That they characterize him as the least American.
American bishops.
Yeah.
Right.
It's still amazing to think. I was like, man, no way. Of course, I mean, you know, I think Francis was the first New World Pope. So,
yeah.
That
bothers me just a little. I don't know why. Calling him the first American, he's the first North American. He's the first
That's
United
true.
States.
Look at you, a citizen of our global world.
Well, because
world,
Francis
Andrew.
Was South American. Because
right.
that, you
oh,
know,
I know,
it's not in general. I usually don't adopt that phraseology.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But just in this
but you're
one
being
case.
Less America-centric. I'm proud of you.
Look at me dropping the jingoism everywhere.
Well, I don't know. We were on the break. I did enlighten him to remind him that, you know, our insurance rates should be better with the change because now there's never been
the name change.
Yes, there's never been a hurricane in the Gulf of America. So,
that's right.
You know, so far,
all right.
Knock on wood, at least
there's been no storms. There's been no damage. The Gulf of America is like should be an insurance bump for us.
Absolutely.
All right. So let me show you how shallow my convictions are. You know I am 100% opposed to the Gulf of America renaming. But if it got me a discount on my home insurance,
oh, I'd be all in. I'd have a flag.
You can buy me easy.
I'd be up there at the selfish sign doing the installation myself.
Just on that note, we didn't talk about it yet today, but Jimmy Petronas actually offered to President Trump. He wrote him a letter. And it was very much a, hey, this is great, wonderful, and what you should do is you should really commemorate it and come to District 1 and do a ceremony where you officially cut the ribbon on the name now that it's official. Although it has to pass the Senate, and it is not going to pass the Senate.
Right.
The Senate's going to veto this.
Yeah.
But they're going to deny it.
Right,
I would be surprised. Yes. So it's not official, not yet.
Well, the Florida legislature, both sides and the governor have signed off on it being the Gulf of America, so...
The one thing they've agreed on.
Yeah, yeah.
That
and banning fluoride.
That's
right.
Right. That's
you know,
right.
No more fluoride. Good. We're fluoride now.
These are the important topics.
Yeah. So speaking of that, thoughts on the banning of fluoride? Do you have a position?
You know, I you changed my mind earlier this week, or was it last week, when you basically framed it as the non-voluntary medication.
Mm-hmm.
And I do support fluoride. It's helpful for poor kids. You know, I'm not one of these conspiratorial
and elderly, which
you're
very
people.
Close to.
That's right, and the elderly. But you know, the 5 minutes that I've spent pondering it, I think you're right philosophically. Does the government have a right to
medicate us?
Medicate our water, our water supply?
It's post COVID. If somebody came and said, "We've got a great solution. It's going to reduce cavities. We're going to put fluoride in everybody's water." Not in Florida, you're not, mm-hmm. you know, and that I really do think it's a beneficial thing. I think
right.
that on balance, I think the harms are minor. I think that you have to have high levels in order to have the harm. And I don't think we have those levels. I think that it causes a good thing, especially for people who would otherwise have to pay more and suffer. And kids are going to have toothaches because we take away the fluoride.
Right.
That's just true.
Right.
But the principle that you can't medicate people's water without their consent. How do you get around that?
I tried to apply the Supreme Court test, you know, the levels of scrutiny. There's a compelling government interest there.
There certainly
for
is.
Sure.
But it's a police power for sure.
It's not narrowly tailored,
right?
It's not the least
intrusive.
Least intrusive method. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was a very interesting.
Thanks.
Yeah,
Grover.
Well, the one thing I would say is I believe there is consent in Escambia County because we had to vote on that. And there was a vote that people did take that. But I mean,
but that's the majority inflicting their will on the minority, right?
That happens every day in American politics.
But it doesn't happen about medicine.
I don't disagree with you, but I'm just simply saying be careful how you phrase it because
there was a vote.
And the only thing I can say is, you know, what I talked to you about is I don't know that we're better off because we make wide sweeping changes from Tallahassee and Washington always. I mean, I remember when the Republican Party used to be about small government, local government, and doing things
right.
the way you can in your local, you know, taking small government means. I still am a big believer in that, and I'm a big believer that we should determine what we do in Escambia County and in this community. Now, again, how you feel about it, I was never strong one way or the other. I tend to understand where you are. I haven't seen the harm in what it's doing, but, I mean, there are a lot more important issues
yes.
we have in Escambia County than fluoridation.
And I am, it would have been better to let each county decide for itself.
Home rule. Golly, the 1969.
But isn't this so obviously part of a larger, you know, the raw milk push,
mm-hmm.
the live water push? This is obviously part of a larger anti-science disestablishmentarianism of the Republican Party, right?
Well, there's certainly enough of that to go around. Yeah, I would agree with that. John Pickens has traffic on the 5. John?
We're back to accident-free right now. I-10, I-110 are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Speaking of big words, the disincorporation of Century. This has, as long as I've lived here, Century has been a smoldering dumpster fire of various proportions. They cannot keep anybody in office. They can't keep anybody employed. They certainly don't. I mean, it's a dysfunctional government. It's a failed city.
Yes.
It's clearly a failed city. Even, you know, Senator Gates has said that, I don't know why we're not taking them apart and, you know, let the county run. And, you know, me, Grover, I'm going to be the last one to say that, you know, Escambia County ought to be the one to jump in and help. You can't do worse.
Right. They have failed.
In fairness to Escambia County has been doing a lot of stuff for them.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done all the law enforcement. We've done, they don't have their own police. It's Escambia County law enforcement does
right.
it. There are a number of other things up there that Escambia County has done. When I was commissioner, we had to do a bunch of things. We dealt with the issue related to their sewer when they were trying to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
When I was mayor,
it's
we had
very expensive things,
yeah,
by
we,
the
we,
way.
We helped them out trying to deal with their gas. I love the ability for people to determine what they want to do and if the people of Century wanted that, but they have to financially be able to keep that responsibility. And if they can't do it, mm-hmm. then it probably does need to just go back to the county because the county is doing so many things already. I think the real issue, if the people of Century want it, then they need to figure out how they're going to do that. And if they can't financially do it, then...
Do, you're a long time in government in Florida. Can cities, like, what is the process of disincorporating?
Can
a county bring that to the ballot?
Or does
the city council that's not even functioning have
that?
You know?
That I don't know. You're gonna have to bring somebody on, an attorney that does that more. I don't know because I was told that cities don't have a, you know, it was like we talked about one time a piece of property where we de-annex it and we didn't really have a process to de-annex to send it back to the county. So there's process to annex stuff in, and we've done that.
You can grow, but you can't shrink.
Yeah. I don't know how that would happen. All right. You have to talk to an attorney.
Is the county, is the county willing to
do
that?
I don't know. I think the county's position has always been, having been there before, was we are going to do whatever we can to help.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the county has never wanted to step on their toes, and I get it. But at the same time, if they can't financially live up to the obligations, I think that's where the realistic part has to meet. And I don't think the county wants to make that decision. I don't think the county should make that decision. But if the state legislature says they can't make it in something else, then they have the ability to make those things work.
Let's tackle something simple, the fire service fee.
Perfect.
What I've been trying to do with folks is to really explain the complexity of this issue. I know the beach residents, and of course you represented the beach. You were the District 4 commissioner before Bender, before Hoffberger. So you know this issue well. They currently pay about double what the rest of the county pays. One proposal had the businesses getting 11,000% increase on their fire service fee, and the residents getting a double, and the rest of the county basically getting a double. The other proposal would be to equalize the beach and the rest of the county so that they would all pay, we'd all pay more, but we'd pay the same more. And you have all kinds of questions about what level of service are you getting? What insurance are you paying? Are you more a risk of costing the county money because you have a high rise or because you live in an old building or you have sprinklers or don't have sprinklers? There's all these issues. What's the right way to fund the fire service?
Well, I mean, I'll say a couple things. I was there when we went, really moved to much more from a very much a volunteer. And one of the reasons the volunteer was kind of going away and we had to really go career.
Mm-hmm.
I totally supported that move. Always believed that was the right thing from public safety. I'm very proud to see where fire service is in Escambia County and what it's able to take care of. Because I believe at the end of the day, we should be having some type of professional. I mean, we certainly loved having the volunteer, but when we couldn't get the support anymore, it was the direction we needed to go. I supported the raise in the rate at the time. It really depends on what you said, the level of service, because the issue is when I was there, the beach was getting a higher level service, really essentially a municipal service, and the rest of the county wasn't. So there was a justification in why their rate was higher.
At that time, yes.
Correct. I do not know the details of where the stuff is and who gets what, but I think there has to be a fairness of you get what your service is. Here's the way it rolls out. I live in the city of Pensacola. I live in the city of Pensacola because I'm willing to pay the additional taxes to have additional police and additional fire service. I don't mind doing that. That's what I do. I could choose to live in the county. I could move out and live somewhere else. I'm happy living where I live. I think to an extent, people at the beach, because of the tourist nature and what was going on there, we needed to provide almost full municipal service. So when we were there, it wasn't a big deal to me that they paid extra. And if somebody griped about it on the beach, I would remind them that you are basically getting municipal service, something that no one else in the county is getting. And so I don't know where they are, but whatever the price of what you get has to be commensurate with the level of service. And if the level of service in the rest of the county is similar to what they're going to get on the beach, then I think they ought to be paying the same.
And I think, you know, you have, like, the county, to its credit, is going to push forward with 5 either new or refurbished stations. It's a $36 million price tag. I think Ashley Hoffberger proposed that, all of which are outside of District 4, by the way, which I thought was kind of interesting. It's a good trade-off to some of the other stuff that she's looking for. But I like that. The county's doing that. The county's, you know, getting raises in for Escambia County Fire Rescue. They've been pretty good at acquiring, equipment over the last several years.
LOCs EMS trucks, absolutely.
More fire trucks as well, even though occasionally I disagree with them on why they failed to get one or two. But generally speaking, that's actually been, they've been in an acquisition mode, which is good. But, you know, we charge people a flat fee, right?
Right.
And I like that because at least you're not making the rich people pay more like we do in everything else, when actually it's people who don't make as much are more at risk of causing a fire. But it's weird that the person who lives a mile from the fire station pays the same flat fee that the person who lives 10 miles from the nearest fire station, and that's a massive response time gap.
Yeah, I mean, if you live in a luxury part of the county, you know, using that term loosely, then I'm sorry, but the taxes have to be commensurate with that, right? I mean, it's Park Avenue on the Monopoly board. You know, it's more expensive to provide fire services out there. To your point about the high rises, I just think it's a greater risk, and I think they need to finance that greater risk. Not maybe 11,000%, but they need to finance the greater risk.
Yeah, and you know, you also have the other fairness question about, like, we ought to be developing. I feel like I'm crazy to say it, but if we had the infrastructure in place and then developed around the infrastructure, you know, like if we could figure out a way to incentivize, instead of sprawl developments that are too far away from fire stations, why not we build a little bit more density where they're close to fire stations, which is good for the county. It's lower cost. You know, they have better response time. They're going to prevent fires more or put them out quicker. And it's better for the residents, too. But instead, we have this, well, show me your subdivision plan. All right, fine. Eventually, we'll figure out the roads and the sewers and the electricity and the internet and the fire service and all of that.
We need higher density housing for sure, but we need housing.
Yeah,
more
no, that's true. That's true too. Grover, you were going to say.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think if you really got down to that, the one time we actually looked at that doing it, we actually did it was when we did the sector plan. But then that all fell apart and never materialized.
And everybody's opting out.
Yeah. But it actually set up for what you said. But I mean, it was one of those things. It doesn't work because you don't build it out all at the same time. So I get that. But you know, that was an attempt to really do that. But I mean, I think at the end of the day. The issues, they're a little bit more complex because even though you say, well, these people, you know, high rise or whatever else, you are more likely to have an impact of a fire in a place. So I get the flat fee kind of standpoint, and everybody needs protection because you don't know when you're going to have a fire. I mean, that's half of most of the time, like I said, I'm happy to pay you not to go out. I just want to pay you there in case you need to go out. So
my favorite thing in the whole wide world is if we pay a bunch of money for outstanding fire service that we never have to use.
Bingo.
Like that would be the win. That's bingo. Like when the cops don't have any calls.
Right.
Woo-hoo. Yeah. Good, yeah. You know? So, but you got to have it cause you never know what's going to happen and you got to have it so it functions. It's always going to be, there's going to be somebody closer and somebody further. I don't think you can rationalize it out that closely, but I do think there has to be some level of service with what you pay, and I think there's a way to. We did that when I was there, I think they'll find out what it is. But I mean, overall, you know, we were getting better stations and better things there. We were taking over stations that had been formerly all volunteer, and it was great when we had volunteers. We loved having a volunteer system. But when you
hold that thought for just a second, because I'm way late to get into traffic on the fives. We'll come back to this. John, go ahead.
Still rolling accident free. No delays to let you know about. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Right. So Grover, you're saying
you couldn't get the people anymore.
Yeah.
And that's where we actually had. If you remember, we had some fires up here where nobody was responding to them. So we had to move in a case to get more career firefighters. And I'm very proud of things we did while I was there that really started that genesis of where we were with.
And I'm reluctant to be the guy who gets on the radio and says, we're building these five new fire stations. We need to make those communities pay for it. You know, like that seems right and wrong. You know what I mean? And so it's just, I think in the end, you're never going to get something that really makes sense. There's too many competing factors.
Right, right.
You have to settle on something that everybody doesn't hate too much.
Correct.
And
that's democracy.
That is democracy.
I mean, again, the least bad option.
Unfortunately, but that's where government sometimes comes down.
That's right.
It's being fair to everybody, I think, is the way you try to do it.
Yes.
All right. The last thing, and we don't have nearly enough time to do this, but we've just been talking about this a bunch. $25 million to put artificial turf on the John R. Jones fields that really what they, in order to develop tourism, you know, like sports tourism, I've run the numbers. I can't get their numbers to work. It seems like it's a lot of money when we could be spending money on the Bay Center for things we have been talking about for years. We rushed this through, but I am willing to be persuaded. Grover, you sat in that seat.
I'm not up on this issue
okay,
enough.
All right,
what I am up on enough is that I do believe in this. If LOST passes again, it is going to be time for us to do something with the Bay Center. The jail took the last LOSD section was the major part of trying to figure out what didn't come from the FEMA stuff. So I think this time we got to figure out what we're going to do with the Bay Center. We do need to do it. It is a quality of life issue for our community, and something needs to happen to the center.
I'll be honest. I think that if you go into an election having just put $25 million of artificial turf on an existing ball field, people may be reluctant to re-up the LOSD.
Yeah.
Josh, 10 seconds.
Fire on the beach is a hard issue, but this is not a hard issue. The money needs to go to the Bay Center.
We get that solved, and don't worry about these kind of like pipe dreamy economic development ideas. I cannot pencil the math. Right. Yeah. I'm with you on that. Grover, Josh, thanks for the time. Thanks for what you do.
Local news every hour and breaking news.